always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
All right, got a question for you.
Might have an answer.
Yeah, why are the institutions of higher learning often the dumbest groups of people in our society?
I think Thomas Sowell wrote a whole book about that.
Yeah.
Or two. Yeah. About the intellectuals and... He has two intellectuals and something or other books. And I think it gets into that.
See, I'm treading lightly given that I am married to an academic.
Right, right. I mean, now, Rachel... is obviously an exception. Well, she's an exceptional woman.
I think she would agree with at least the overall concept of what I just said.
Yes.
You know, because, yeah, she's the outcast. She's ended up at a very conservative university. There are such things.
They're like five.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well, and it's funny because the university that she now works at, and she's up in Chicago right now on campus, and that university has made it very clear, this is what we are going to become. We are going to become a conservative values university.
Right.
And they're doing it there. So, but overall, I mean, just look at the news. Why are the institutions of higher learning such centers of stupidity? And the thing is that you say that and they would scoff and look down at all of us.
Oh, yeah. And then here come the credentials and the don't you know who I am?
Right. Don't you know I live in an ivory tower?
Yeah. So it's like, don't you see my tower?
Yeah.
With all of my accolades.
I am above, I am above criticism. All right. Let's get to that here in a second. By the way, this non-compete thing is really interesting to me. You saw the news about this.
I haven't.
Okay. So the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, votes to ban non-compete agreements and the enforcement of them.
In their entirety?
Done. Yeah.
Wow. That's a very big rule change.
And at this point, it looks like it's encompassing across the board on everything. So should businesses require non-competes and should government stop businesses from requiring them are two different questions on this. So I want to talk about that 620. I think this is really interesting. I had no idea that about 1 in 5 workers in America are affected by a non-compete. And there's a whole lot of people that do not need to be subject to a non-compete.
1 in 5?
I had no idea.
Okay. That's a little exorbitant. Okay.
Right. But there are some positions. I get it.
Well, sure. But it sounds like the pendulum might have swung a little too hard.
That's what we're looking at. So a 620, especially if you're affected by a non-compete, I'd love to know your story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 314-912-1019, or you can message us on social media here. Okay, Columbia is now among the universities making the mistake of treating protesters like stakeholders who should be heard. That's what I mean when I say these institutions of higher learning being stupid, because you know you've got the news reports of, well, the university and the leadership, and they're trying to come to a resolution, and they're working, you know, they're having talks with the protester. I mean, no, you don't. You don't do that.
Right.
And we
don't negotiate with terrorists.
Well, exactly. Or their sympathizers.
Or their sympathizers, exactly.
And Columbia has now canceled in-person classes. Now, they have now said from the rest of the semester, unless it's a practicum-based thing, the teachers have to allow online remote learning so students can go home. Into that, Jewish students can go home and still get
that's
education.
That's really what it is there. Yeah.
Because some reports said that everything is online only. They're not having in-person classes. I've seen conflicting reports about that.
Okay.
Some say that the in-person classes will continue, but the university has said they must allow people to Zoom in or FaceTime in or whatever. Now we've got arrests happening at Yale and New York University as well. And Stell just read off a list of other universities where these protests are bubbling up. I saw one of the dumbest tweets earlier today because somebody was criticizing this, and I don't remember who tweeted it. They said, when was the last time that student protests were on the wrong side of history? Basically, like, listen to the children, they're right. No, hit the children with a baton over their skull. That's what you should be doing.
How about the Chinese Revolution?
Yeah, they were wrong about that.
When they strung up their teachers teachers and their parents and had them murdered in the streets because they wouldn't adhere to the communist revolution.
Yeah.
That's one last time the college kids were not really on the right side of history.
How about on the George Floyd stuff? How about on the Black Lives Matter stuff? How about, I mean, you
hands
know,
up, don't shoot.
Yeah.
Remember exactly. All that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. They've been wrong a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's kind of actually very clear. Even some of the protests back in the day, you know, some of the 60s protests that everybody kind of lauds, not all of those were the positive kind. No, not all of those were oriented properly.
Right. And so the reason that they're wrong a lot is because they're dumb kids.
Exactly.
I don't care if you're at Yale or Harvard or MIT or mm-hmm. whatever. When you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you're a dumb kid.
Yeah. Well, here's the more polite way of saying it. You don't have the proper historical and experiential context with which to view the world properly and make determinations as to what is and is not right and wrong.
That's but I know it all.
Yeah. You I do not, sir.
Mike, professor, says I'm very promising.
You right? Know, yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah. So, but here's, you know, now we've got this tactic that we've seen throughout the country. We've seen it right here. And, you know, you said Wash U is one of the places where another one of these that could be bubbling up another one of these things. So they may try to act like the big kids because Wash U thinks it's an Ivy League school. You know, just listen, high tuition doesn't make you an Ivy League school. Okay.
Well, they call themselves a Harvard of the Midwest.
Right. Exactly. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Listen, the Ivy League schools aren't what they used to be. Harvard isn't what it used to be. No. Princeton isn't what it used to be. You know, I mean, they're not as prestigious as they used to be because of garbage like this.
Absolutely. Well, and the other thing, too, is it's diminishing the old prestige that was carried by 76. One of the reasons why I spent so much freaking money to go where I went when I had full rides elsewhere was because I knew there was a prestige aspect to it. I sometimes call it the O factor. So, because when you meet somebody and they say, oh, so where'd you go to school? And I say, MIT. They go, oh.
Yeah.
That's an O factor. I appreciated the O factor. I paid through the freaking nose for the O factor. Now that O has a different tinge to it, I imagine. You know, it's like, so where did you go to school? MIT?
Oh.
Yeah.
Question mark.
Right. Question mark. Exactly.
Are you one of those?
That's the question now, as opposed to exclamation point. I like this.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know what percentage of the students are involved in the stupidity. I'm going to try to convince myself that it's a minority of the students. I'm going to try to.
We'll say a 40% minority.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a high number, but I'm going to agree with you to say that the overall feeling is not quite, you know, 50 plus. You know what I mean?
So if I'm a parent and I'm seeing my kids told, listen, it may be safe for you to log in and go to class instead of going on campus. You may want to stay in your dorm or stay in your apartment, or maybe you want to go home and just finish them there.
Mm-hmm. For safety.
For safety.
Mm-hmm.
Because we won't stop violent terrorist sympathizing protesters from trying to tell us how to run our university. And I'm paying $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year for this.
Yeah, I'm looking for transfer forms.
I'm looking for transfer forms, and I want my money back.
Yeah, also that.
Because you're failing at providing the product and service that I'm paying for.
Hey, that's actually a good point. Yeah. I hope especially the alums, the legacies who sent their kids to their alma mater, and they are probably a little too well to do to qualify for mm-hmm. certain things, so they're paying outright. I think if they had like a little bit of a class action, like kind of a mini class action lawsuit, a good dozen or two of them get together, that could hurt the university, and it should be hurt.
And on college campuses, on university campuses, there's this mindset in this culture that, well, if somebody's protesting, then they basically are running the show.
Yeah.
You know, because we just can't listen. And this is where ideas should be exchanged anywhere. I mean, we should do it on this show, which we do. But you know what? If you come in and set up a tent and you decide you're going to occupy my studio right now, and from 5:30 to 9, it's my studio, that's not going to happen. And I will enact whatever force I needed to get you out of here. The universities, we're not talking about them standing on the in the quad with their signs and chanting. If they did that, we would tell you why they're wrong.
Sure.
Make fun of them.
Yeah. And we'd say, walk around them.
Right. We'd say, walk around them. And if the police came in with the water cannons and the hoses, we would criticize the universities.
Yes, because that's a heavy-handed response to an otherwise peaceful demonstration.
And free speech.
Yeah, exactly.
That is free speech. You've got the right to say ugly, stupid, yes, even discriminatory things under the guise of free speech. You're allowed to do that in this country.
Yeah, and I think organizations like FIRE, I think, or I think what they might have a new acronym now, they would come in and defend even some of the most reprehensible speech,
right,
so long as it's within the bounds of free speech.
Right, but that's not what's happening.
Right.
This this mindset and this trend of the hard left is that we're going to occupy, we're going to use force, we're going to use threats, we're going to use violence, one-way violence. So when somebody lays a hand back on them, they throw a fit. I can't believe you're oppressing me. But their ends justify the means, and we're going to outnumber them. That's not free speech.
No.
No, and then the demands, like the universities at Columbia, for one, they're like, you know, we're going to meet with them and talk about their demands. They don't have demands. They're kids.
Yeah.
They're students.
They don't know what the end game is.
No. And even if they had some sort of cognitive understanding of all this, it doesn't matter.
No.
You know, if you don't like it, let the market respond, transfer somewhere else. You know,
I think the colleges are facing an interesting dilemma because this is a problem of their own making. They created these activists. They cultivated them. You know, academia feeding off of K through 12 public education in particular has been grooming these kids to become this sort of activist since day one. It's like, oh my God, you got to stand up for what you believe in, and you got to do all this, and not you
conservative.
Yeah, well, yeah, not you guys,
hateful
but yeah,
bigots.
Yeah, yes, you know. The revolution fists everywhere, and the rainbow flags and the kafias and all of these things have been in these kids' faces forever, and they've been told that when they see a quote unquote injustice through the lens that they've been given, that they have to act within the bounds of whatever platform they've been given, and their activism must be radical. Right. So they create the university, academia created these little monsters, and now they're reaping the whirlwind for it.
Right. All right. 314-912-1019. Let me know what you think. Just ahead here. Did you know that a survey by a Federal Reserve, one of the regional Federal Reserves, found that about 18-19% of Americans are affected by a non-compete agreement in their workplace. Working Americans, not Americans, those who actually work.
This is weird.
Yeah.
That's weird to me.
The FTC, this has been a big platform of the Biden administration, get rid of non-competes. They vote to ban non-competes. I'm fascinated by this. I'll tell you why.
Kind of wild.
At 620 here, 101.9-941 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
All right, want the job? Then sign this agreement that says you won't jump ship and work for the competition. Should that be allowed? Tell me what you think. We'll get to that here in just a couple of minutes or so. By the way, at News Talk STL, we know full well how biased Facebook is.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Will the company try to influence the elections this year? We're going to dig into that at 6:35 because we know full all. When I say we know.
Oh, gosh, yes.
You know, Facebook literally would not take money from us when we wanted to tell St. Louis we're here.
Yeah. He's like, hi, we exist and we're conservatives. Like,
That's right.
You can't do that.
All right. Before we get to this non-compete thing, which I'm telling you, hang with me here. This is really fascinating. Let's talk to Scott. Scott had some thoughts on all the campus protest and stuff that's happening. Hey, Scott, thanks for being part of the show, man. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I wonder how much of the issues with this with the students at these, you know, $5,000-$6,000 a month schools would be solved if they had to apply for a student loan the same way a small business person would have to apply for a loan through a bank. What are you going to school for? Oh, I want to do gender studies. No, you're not worth the risk.
Yeah.
So you don't get the money. This stuff has been boiling up. I'm probably a few years older than you guys. This stuff has been boiling up since the 60s. The higher education has been socialized since the 60s in the days of, you know, Kent State. Boy, wouldn't that wake up a few people now if that happened again? But having folks with you know, socialist ideas, pushing it through the education system, and it's only gotten worse. You know, when I was 20-something and you heard somebody like a Bernie Sanders, you'd laugh and you scoff at him. Now he's one of 100 senators who has influence.
It's pretty wild, Scott.
The country is in peril. And these folks that we're talking about now, the folks at WashU, Yale, all these schools, not only they're our future leaders, they're the present ones. Because who do you think these staffers are for these congresspeople? Who do you think these recent law school grads are at these silk stocking firms that prosecute conservatives? It's happening now. We don't have to wait 10 years for it.
Scott, you hit the nail on the head with the loan issue, and that's actually one of my really unpopular opinions. I think government should get completely out of providing money for higher education, and in doing so, you just let the market do it. You let the banks at it, and they get to underwrite your education based on the prospects of you actually repaying the loan. And you're exactly right; it would reshape our universities almost instantly.
There was no way for me to go to school without loans, but I took the loans out and I paid them back in full.
Yep.
Now you've got folks, you know, this illusion of cancellation of debt. No, you're just shifting it to the taxpayers.
That's right.
Yeah, and those of us who have already paid off our debts. Hey, Scott, thanks so much for being part of the program.
That's a great day.
We're able to do it. Okay, so the Federal Trade Commission, the commissioners voted on Tuesday 3-2 to ban non-compete agreements. Okay, so just so we're setting, we all know what a non-compete is. That is where, as a condition of the employment, you must sign a contractual agreement that says, here are the terms for you leaving. You know, after you will not work for a competing company for X number of months or even years. You can't go start a company that competes with us for X number of months or years. You can't, you know, contact our clients for whatever the case is. And so those are part of this. Now, according to the FTC, and I'm pretty sure that they are relying on a regional Federal Reserve study, they say 30 million people, about 1 in 5 workers, are covered under some kind of non-compete agreement.
That's really wild to me. I did not expect it to be that high. Is it still exclusively in a sort of in media, extend to other sectors?
Right, because when I first saw this, I thought, boy, we understand that in the media business.
Yeah.
We have non-competes like crazy in our industry.
Right.
But according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, they found that more than 1 in 10 workers who earn less than $20 an hour are covered by non-competes. They found non-competes literally at like sandwich shops, you know.
What?
The places where, you know, you do the custom sandwiches, you know, Jimmy John's, Subway. And I don't know which of those companies do or don't have them.
Right.
But they found non-competes in just completely nonsensical places.
That's wild to me. Yeah. That doesn't make any sense.
And the rule, which the FTC approved, does not apply to nonprofits.
Right. Okay.
And so we're just talking about in an actual commercial business, which actually, because nonprofits are so reliant on donor lists, I don't know how you could not have somebody work at a nonprofit. So here's the thing, though. The Biden administration has made this a big priority, and this has had a lot of bipartisan support on it. I've been subject to a non-compete because I work in media. Here's the way it works in our industry. You know, if you leave or quit, I mean, there's been some pretty famous or infamous cases of that around St. Louis in recent years, where you can't be on the air in this market, in this city, for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. I've even seen as long as 24 months, depending on who you are. When I left, the last time that I left a station where I had a contract. Now, remember, at the other place over where we all came from, you know, I was basically an hourly guy.
You were a hired gun.
Right. I was a hired gun over there, and I provided some programming for the weekends. But the last time I had a contract, they said that when I left, that I couldn't be on the air on any other station in that market for 6 months, or within, I think it was 100 miles of the actual broadcast tower. Well, I left with another agreement in place with them to have my other show put on there. So it was fine with me. It didn't affect me. But there are people who who leave that industry, or think of it, pick anything else, technical, coding, whatever the case is, something where you have knowledge of what they do. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, we don't want to develop you and then just have you go take that skill set or you know, proprietary knowledge to our competitor. Okay, well, that makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, wait a minute, I want to earn more money. I want a promotion. If they're going to hire me for a manager's job or something like that, then why shouldn't I be able to go do that? And they're saying, well, you can, but you got to sit out of the business for 6 months.
Now, are non-disclosure agreements included in the non-compete?
Those are different.
Numbers.
Yeah, those are different.
Well, just wondering if they were counted in the numbers.
No, we're talking non-competes.
Because if we're talking like technical field and stuff like that, non-disclosures make sense because you can't hand one, you know, one company's proprietary information to the other. It's like there'd be so much poaching of technical talent if that were a thing. But it makes sense in our industry, in this industry here, that you don't want a voice that was kind of defining to your station on the next station over. That's your exact competition.
But earlier, Stell, you said you like the idea that they are banning the non-competes. Why is that?
Because I can see incidents in the past, and I'll mention a couple names. Vic, for instance.
Right, yeah, Vic Porcelli. Yeah.
When he left this market, he wound up working in Bloomington Normal for a while, and that was because the non-compete, I think for him, might have had a 90-mile radius, or like you said, a 100-mile radius.
Yeah, mine was 100, but
so he got a job in Bloomington, so he's driving back and forth to Bloomington working there. I have friends in the Chicago area, and you wonder why a lot of folks work in the Rockford market and they wind up in Chicago or vice versa. It's because the radius, Rockford is outside the radius of their non-compete agreement. So you hear these folks doing Top 40 and rock radio in Rockford for a while, and then they're back in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Same thing with going to Milwaukee and then Chicago.
Right.
So, when you've got your family and you've lived in an area and all of a sudden you lose a job and you've got this restriction, I'm in favor of making the change.
And there are some industries where it's like, why on earth? I mean, I remember when I was in college, I applied for and got a job at a video rental store. Remember video rental stores? It was a local one. We had like three low places. So we were, Blockbuster was about to come in, and there were some other, we were called Family Video.
Yes.
I was just a guy there that checked out the movies and stocked them back on the shelf. And they actually had written into the thing when you signed up that you couldn't go work for another video rental place for like 3 months.
See, that's silly.
I mean, I'm obviously silly. I'm a 19-year-old, you know, what industry knowledge am I bringing?
That you could take to the other
Exactly. Video place. That's just stupid.
Well, you would create brand confusion. Because they walk in and it's like, wait a minute, I know you from the other place.
Didn't you check out Heather's to me at the other place the other
day? You're my favorite checkout guy. He's like, that's not how that works.
No. And even then, I remember looking at that going, if I'm going to go work at the other place, I'm going to.
He's like, sue me.
Yeah, sue. But the problem is always they send a lawyer letter.
That's true.
To the other place, and they're like, it's just not worth it. Anybody off the street.
That's true.
And like, for instance, the example I read about was, you know, making the sandwiches.
Yeah.
At some point they're like, there were some places, say you hire a non-compete, that you won't go work for a competing company.
Right.
And that became a standard practice. Didn't matter what your industry was.
That's crazy.
That is insane. So there's the question is, should businesses require that? Majority of the time, no.
Right.
But here's the other thing. Should government be involved to tell them we are not going to allow you to have that sort of contractual law? Because when you look at, for instance, let's say, a bank or, you know, and even in our case in media, you know, I kind of get why they wouldn't want me. I mean, we're the fastest growing talk show in the city right now. Would they want me going to work on another station tomorrow?
Oh, absolutely.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Do I have the right to go do that? Well, I mean, I don't know, based on what we're building here. I mean, so when you look at the different industries, I don't think it should be one size fits all.
Absolutely not one size fits all.
Yeah. A high level or even mid level manager with high technical or industry there is a reason somebody might want to protect that. But at the same time, how do you balance that with you still got a right to go make a living and improve your station in life if you want?
I think it should fall under, you know, kind of like copyright law in terms of, basically they use brand confusion as a reason for protecting certain copyrights. Like you can't make your soda the same, like, right. Like
the same font.
Yeah, the same font as Coca-Cola. Not very clearly. It has to be a little bit different. That's why you get like Dr. Fizzle instead of Dr. Pepper or whatever. you know what I mean? So you don't want brand confusion. So I can see where the government would be capable of stepping in there, but I also see where the government should be capable of stepping in to protect employed workers, so that they can go and actually make a living in their industry.
I've been poor enough to have to go to Sam's Choice soft drinks for the kids, too. I get it.
I don't get why Dr. Paprika never made it.
Dr. Paprika. It sounds like a weird flavor, that's why.
Hey, we know that Facebook is biased, right? We know that really big here. Are they planning to try to influence the upcoming election? Let's talk about that with our friend with Media Research Center at around 6:36.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
With Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, yeah. I know we're going to talk to Dan Schneider in a minute, but sorry, Dan, you got to wait. Stevie Ray Vaughan's playing. I could listen to Stevie Ray Vaughan all day. All right, now, we know most social media companies are biased. We know that.
Yes.
They're biased in one way or the other. You know, Rumble says, hey, we're catering to conservatives. You know, now most of the ones that are biased towards conservative just haven't really done that well.
Mm-hmm.
But we know, you know, before Elon Musk that Twitter, anti-conservative, anti-libertarian, the Twitter, anti-free market.
The Twitter files showed it.
Yeah,
pretty clearly.
Facebook in particular, we know that well here.
You know that firsthand.
Oh, we know that absolutely firsthand. So what do we need to know about all of that as we head into the 2024 elections? And remember, when this station first started 3 years ago, we had investors and, you know, we're a locally owned company. And we hired a team to help us get the marketing out there to tell everybody we're here. And we tried to advertise on Facebook to tell, because that's frankly where a lot of you are.
Cool little video commercial there.
We had a commercial that just said there's a new conservative talk station. Our agency told us, we'll try, but they ain't going to do it because you said conservative.
Yeah.
That's literally what they said. So we tried to place the ad a couple times, and as they predicted, Facebook would not take the money because we were advertising a conservative anything. They turned us down. They said, we refuse to do business with you. We will not take your money because you're promoting something conservative. So anytime somebody says, oh, you know, you guys are no. They really literally told us they would not take our money and allow us to tell people we're here.
One of those commercials ran for like a day and a half.
Oh, maybe.
And then it got taken down, and there was a warning. And I remember seeing the warning. Katie showed it to me. It said it was taken down for election interference.
Oh, my.
Seriously.
Oh, wow.
The mere existence of a conservative radio station in St. Louis was election interference.
That is bizarre.
Dan Schneider joins us now from the Media Research Center. Dan, been a while since we've chatted. Good to talk to you. So there's our war stories on this. So you all have a new study out along with Free Speech America that's saying Facebook in particular didn't just show bias. You're saying full on tipping the scales in an election. What did you find?
Yeah, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has said many things that we really like and appreciate about how his platform should not be used for election interference, that his platform should be used for free speech, and that the resources and the power of Facebook would not be used to tilt the election. And every time he gave one of these speeches, internally, you know, we would see people at Facebook at the next highest levels, from the Sheryl Sandberg COO role on down, they would basically just give a middle finger to their boss and do exactly the opposite of what he said. Some of your listeners are going to be libertarians, and they're going to say, well, look, Facebook's a private company. Mm-hmm. It can do whatever it wants, just like you guys can say whatever you want. Well, that's not true. Under our election laws, if a company engages in electioneering, they are required to disclose those campaign contributions, including in-kind contributions. And Facebook and Google's even far worse than Facebook. But these corporations, they are intentionally engaging in election kind of conduct, specifically to get people elected to Congress, but they're not complying with the law like you and I would have to. If we give money to a candidate, or if we spend money independently to try to get somebody elected, we're required to publish that with the Federal Election Commission. Facebook doesn't do any of that. They're using billions of dollars of resources behind them to try to get their candidates elected.
Good morning, Dan. Gabe Pfeiffer here. So I think one of the ways they might be trying to kind of get away with this is obfuscating the idea of an in-kind donation. It's like, wait, we're just paying our employees to create these algorithms. And they create the algorithms that we want, and the algorithms are implemented. And how can we carve out the amount of money that we paid for that algorithm and call that a contribution?
What's required under the law is if there's a value created for a candidate. And it's not just algorithms that are being created. There are employees there who are hand-picking, deciding on their own, I don't like this posting, I'm taking it down. And there are internal whistleblowers at Facebook who have specifically explained how Facebook would, you know, these curators would come in, these moderators would come in, and not like something that Donald Trump had posted, or as they said, an average Joe who supports Donald Trump, and target those ads and take them down.
We're visiting with Dan Schneider from the Media Research Center. Okay, now we know about, like, for instance, you know, we talked about the fact that Facebook and some of these others literally had meetings with the White House regarding the Hunter Biden stuff and Trump and Joe Biden. You're also saying in this report that this goes beyond just the presidential race. You're talking about, you know, races around the country congressionally as well. So Facebook has its tentacles kind of everywhere trying to tip the scale. What did you find on that?
Well, the candidates across the country for Congress, for state office, for governors, if you were a Republican, you were much more likely to get targeted. And sometimes these candidates were candidates that we all know who are loud and proud, Laura Loomer, Marjorie Taylor Greene, but you didn't have to be one of those candidates either. If you were just a pro-life candidate, you know, like Marsha Blackburn, they didn't like pro-life ads going up, and those ads got taken down. And when they took down Marsha Blackburn's pro-life ad, it was, you know, I was pretty happy about that because she got so much more attention for her candidacy and her cause than if they had just let it stay. This is the thing about these big tech oligarchs. They keep on trying to control what we think, what we know, what we believe. And every time they try to ratchet down and control us, we get, you know, we, the American public, we get more upset because we care about our constitutional rights. We care about our government. We care about democracy. And the solution to speech that you don't like is allowing more speech and debate. And these big tech oligarchs have got to learn this lesson.
Good morning, Dan. Stelpontikas here. Did your research also look at search engines? The reason I ask this is because a couple of weeks ago, I looked at 2024 polling information, and I used about four or five different search engines. And on Google, I had to go about 10 or 12 pages in to find anything that was non-left regarding the stories, whether it was CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, etc. Did your research go into search engines also?
Yeah, our first big study on big tech companies was on Google, and Google is the worst by far. It can be difficult for people to understand that because if they've got a Facebook account or a Twitter account, they know if it gets taken down. But Google manipulates what we have access to, and it controls what we know. So we did a number of studies on Google. Before each of the Republican presidential debates, you know, just not long ago, we did two different searches. One search was for Democrat presidential campaign websites, and the other search was for Republican presidential campaign websites. As you'd imagine, Joe Biden's campaign website was the very first search result when we looked for Democrats. Marianne Williamson was also in the top 10, but Google did not return the website for RFK Jr. anytime we did these tests. Anywhere in the country, Google was completely burying RFK's website. And of course, he was the biggest threat to Joe Biden's nomination. More shocking, when we looked for Republican presidential campaign websites, every single time, Google only gave us two campaign websites. Marianne Williamson again, of course, she's a Democrat, and the only other campaign website Google would give us was Will Hurd, who is scoring at less than 1% nationwide. But Google would never give us Donald Trump's campaign website or Ron DeSantis or Vivek Ramaswamy or Nikki Haley. All over the country, whenever we did this, Google was burying the campaign websites of anybody else that might be a threat to Joe Biden. We've done this over and over and over in the Senate races. You know, Eric Schmidt, we love Eric Schmidt. He is a great champion for free speech. You know, his campaign website was constantly buried. If you were a Republican candidate in 2022 for a Senate race, Google was far, far more likely to bury your website if you were a Republican, but promote you in the top five of search results if you were a Democrat. Bing, DuckDuckGo, Tusk, they did not do this. You could do a search on Bing for your favorite Senate candidate, and you would find the Republicans. Google buried you over and over again, though.
One other question for you quickly. Is it true that most folks who go online and go through search engines, only 1% go past the first page?
That's right. Less than 1% of people go past the first page of search results. And this is even more surprising. Only about the first six search results are reviewed by 75% of Americans, but not beyond that. So if you don't make the first six search results, you're toast. You're done. And Google knows this and puts the Republican search results far below that, and usually on the second page for your candidate for office. You know, this is blatant electioneering. If the tables were turned, the Federal Election Commission would be coming hammer and tong after the company, just like Twitter under X now, Elon Musk. All these federal agencies suddenly are bringing enforcement actions against Elon Musk under the Biden administration. You know, this kind of use of government to attack your political opponents must not be allowed. It must not be countenanced.
Dan, I've just got a minute or so left here. So what do we do about it? I mean, you know, us just everyday people, we're here in the Midwest. You know, we know the bias is happening. I can't imagine that anything's going to change from Facebook or Google. Or I mean, they may try to be sneakier about it. But what do we do about it on our end to try to even the scales out?
We've got some attorneys general around the country that are doing a great job. And it starts with Missouri. Thank God for Missouri and Louisiana. We also have secretaries of state around the country who are starting to take action. But ultimately, we the people have to take our country back. We have got to put people in office who are going to honor and respect the Constitution. Let's kick the bastards out. Let's get rid of the people who want to destroy our country and our Constitution.
All right, Dan Schneider, Media Research Center. So people want to find this report that you all were part of. How do they get in touch? And I encourage, I look up your all stuff pretty regularly, looking for content here on the air. So people want to be in touch, follow what you're doing. What's the way to do it?
Well, you can go to mrc.org for Media Research Center. And for our own studies, you can go to freespeechamerica.org. And that's where my team posts it for the Media Research Center.
All right, Dan, good talk to you again. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Dan.
No, thank you.
All right, because I know they're not going to get any better. I mean, when it comes to Google and Facebook, we know they're not going to. They may change their tactics, but they're not going to change the influence they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
All right, 314-912-1019. Let's dump some news on you here before we get to the information segment at the top of the hour. That's just ahead right here on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Day by day, night after night.
Get up, St. Louis. It's Mike Ferguson in the morning.
Hurry, hell,
101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL, live and local.
Listen to what those local folks are telling you.
News Talk STL.
Tony Colombo here, along with Tim Jones for Rodney and Jen Wallner, the Wallner home selling team at Berkshire Hathaway. Rodney and Jen are the number one home selling team in the area, and I can say that from personal experience. They sold our old home faster and for more money than we thought possible, which put us in a great position as we tried to find our perfect new home. And with help from the Wallners, that's exactly what we did. Christine and I couldn't be happier with our experience working with Rodney and Jen Wallner. And Tim, the numbers speak for themselves.
That's right, Tony. Everybody knows the Wallners sell 15 times more homes per year than the typical realtor. And if you're looking to sell your home, right now they have so many qualified buyers, they'll guarantee to obtain you an offer. They're licensed in both Missouri and Illinois, so no matter where you are in the St. Louis region, you can put the Wallners' experience and work ethic to work for you. If you've been thinking about selling your home, don't wait. Call Rodney and Jen Wallner now at 314-810-SOLD. That's 314-810-SOLD. 314-810-SOLD for the Wallner Home Selling Team.
The Herzog Tomorrow Foundation provides private school tuition scholarships through Missouri's new Most Scholars program to cover the cost of accessible, high-quality schooling.
Hi, this is Mayella Esser with the Herzog Tomorrow Foundation. Our private school tuition scholarships wouldn't be possible without the support of generous Missouri taxpayers. If you're a Missouri taxpayer interested in redirecting your tax dollars and sending them to Missouri students in need of a better education, please contact me at herzogmostscholars.org.
Better education for students creates a better tomorrow for all. Learn how you can help provide a better education for Missouri students at herzogmostscholars.org. That's herzogmostscholars.org. Also, sign up for The Lion, an initiative of the Herzog Foundation that carries articles covering a wide range of issues facing American families and culture. herzogfoundation.com. That's herzogfoundation.com.
This hour of Mike Ferguson in the Morning is brought to you by Stifel. Request a portfolio review from your Stifel financial advisor at stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Hey, this is Rob Carter. Join me weeknights at 8 p.m. as I challenge our politicians, expose the political press, and analyze pop culture. It's the Rob Carter Show weeknights from 8 to 10 p.m. here on News Talk STL. Now let's get back to Mike Ferguson in the Morning.
The Morning News Dump.
Are you joking? Is this a joke?
Listen, folks, the Morning News Dump.
Did I send a little classic Survivor on that?
Yes, you did.
Uh-huh. Jimmy Jameson, in his post-Survivor career, actually liked to start his concerts off with that song.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yep. What a great singer he was.
Oh, he was. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. The Biden administration wants to get rid of a non-compete agreements. Is that the right call? I want to come back to that conversation a little bit later on today. Also, here in just a little bit, was Missouri's or is Missouri's foray into being a caucus state a failure?
Hmm.
There's a push to bring us back to a primary state.
Oh, really? Okay.
So 7:05. I want to talk about that. There was a baseball game at Busch Stadium. I'll tell you what happened. That's so good. All right, 6:53. Right now, Mike Ferguson got Gabe Pfeiffer here. Got Stel Ponticus here. Okay, at 7:20, I want to go into more depth about this. Maplewood updates their hate crime ordinance in response to vandalism against a Jewish family. We told you about the vandalism that was happening there.
Yeah.
So last night, the city council voted to include stealing as one of the crimes covered under hate if it's done in connection with, you know, something, you know, racist or religious discrimination or one of the left-wing LGBT type stuff right there. The change happens, of course, as the family has had Israeli flags defaced and stolen, as well as their displays of pictures of the hostages taken by Hamas.
Right.
So I've got mixed feelings.
Same.
One, yeah, one in that I'm very happy that Maplewood city government did something decent as far as responding to anti-Semitism.
At least recognizing
at
it.
At least recognizing it.
That's a big
it.
Plus.
Right.
At this point.
Because Maplewood is so leftist, I didn't really know how they would respond to anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm. And they responded quickly.
Very quickly, yeah. Now, changes to your laws, generally speaking, need to be very thought out and methodical.
Yeah.
But then there's the whole thing about hate crime.
Yeah, that whole concept to begin with. Yes.
Right. So let's do this around 7:20.
Okay.
Let's follow up on this right here. Okay. So stupidity is spreading like a virus or like a like a cancer, however you want to say it, around the campuses around the country. Republican lawmakers sending a letter to White House officials on Tuesday calling on the administration, I should say, to take more action against nationwide college campus protest. That letter has probably already been crumpled up and thrown into a trash can. Senator Mark Warner, who's actually a Democrat, was on Fox's special report with Bret Baier talking about why these things are or how they're getting so far out of hand.
People do have a right to protest. That is a First Amendment right in this country. But they don't have a right, as we've seen at some of these universities, to shut down the university. And if you break the law, as we saw at Columbia University, you ought to be held accountable.
So over 100 of these pro-Hamas, pro-terrorism, anti-Semitic protesters have been arrested on Columbia's campus alone, with other arrests happening at other universities as well.
Yeah, this whole thing with the campuses exploding right now, it's just... honestly, it's making me rethink my understanding of reincarnation, because it's got to be more than one lifetime necessary to accumulate the amount of stupidity that we're seeing displayed. Seriously.
Never underestimate the power of human stupidity. Okay, get this. A Texas judge drops charges against 140 illegal immigrants who were caught on video storming the southern border and doing combat with the Border Patrol officers in El Paso. Yeah, the city's district attorney, his name is Bill Hicks. He has something to say about that particular decision.
It doesn't matter an individual's legal status. If U.S. citizens were involved in this, they too would be charged with rioting.
Okay, so he goes on to say, and this is a little confusing here, but a grand jury found that there's probable cause to charge the illegals and overruled the judge, so the cases are now being processed before returning to the courts as active cases. But a judge literally says, no, we're dropping the charges, but here's the evidence, it's all on video. No, we're dropping the charges.
So crazy to me.
Insane.
Honestly, let's be real here. An invasion at the border should have been met with gunfire. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
It is, yeah. But the illegals know that our officers are not allowed to use very much force, if any force, at all.
Oh, yeah. That's why they overrun them so constantly.
All right. I have to talk about this baseball game.
Is that what it was?
It's the news thing.
just tell them that it happened.
Yeah. Okay, the good news. Wilson Contreras hit a home run in the first inning.
Yay,
that's good. And then the Cardinals got their asses kicked the rest of the way.
Yeah, sure did.
The final score in last night's debacle of a game at Busch Stadium was Diamondbacks 14, Cardinals 1.
You see, when you give up two touchdowns, it's tough to win.
Yeah, exactly. In any sport.
Redbirds going to try to salvage the series and their pride this afternoon at 12:15.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.